This tape is a production of All Roads Ministry, also known as ARM, and this tape is entitled Mixed Marriages. Your speaker is Vin Lewis, founder and president of All Roads Ministry. The purpose of this tape is to educate the listener in a systematic approach, in a way or a technique to lessen the problems which occur in a mixed marriage which happens between a Catholic and a non-Catholic spouse. What are those problems? Perhaps I don't need to inform the reader of those problems, or the listener in this case, as the listener would not obtain this product most likely unless they were already aware of those problems. But nonetheless, in trying to solve a problem, it is sometimes useful to identify and specify the nature of the problem. By definition, two people who are in two different religions have a disagreement on a significant issue, namely religion. Whether we like to admit it or not, ultimately, religion deals with the final things, the important things. What happens to a man after he dies? How is he judged by God? By what standards is he going to determine his fate? In other words, how does a man get to heaven? How does he avoid hell? Disagreement on this must influence a marriage because these are significant issues, particularly if one partner is a Catholic. Another problem is in-laws. Namely, if the in-laws are of different religions, there will be different influences from the extended family on the spouses, even if this is simply concerning holidays and religious traditions, customs, and rituals. Of course, there may be a problem with the children. How are the children going to be raised? What religion are they going to follow? Mixed marriages frequently bring about divorce. By divorce, I mean, of course, the civil dissolution of a marriage. Any divorce is, by definition, an unhappy situation, an admission of failure, a frustration. Of course, Catholics cannot marry after a civil divorce, but nonetheless, a divorce separates part of the marriage bond and breaks part of the marriage contract. And the worst problem, of course, is the damnation of either or both parties. As there is no salvation outside the Catholic Church, the non-Catholic party, should he continue to remain outside the Catholic Church, will ultimately wind up damned. The close association of a Catholic with a non-Catholic in a hopefully loving situation, in a close bond, in an intimate union, brings the true believer closer to certain temptations, to certain susceptibilities to fall away from the faith. And of course, those who fall away from the faith and do not regain it before the time of their judgment are also damned. These are the real problems. Perhaps I did not need to bring them up, but perhaps you also needed an incentive to take this matter seriously. With this in mind, let me proceed to a more formal introduction. Who am I, and what is ARM to produce this product? My name is Vin Lewis. I am the founder and president of All Roads Ministry. All Roads Ministry is an organization which is designed to educate, instruct, and train the average Catholic so that he may be armed in being able to defend, explain, and spread the true faith, that is, the true faith of the Catholic Church, to those who are either ignorant of it, opposed to it, or weak in its practices. ARM produces many products, audio tapes, books, essays, tracts, publications, etc., which enable Catholics to do this. We also welcome non-Catholics to examine our products so that they may become aware that the true religion, the only true religion, is the Catholic Church. I point this out to you so that you may have confidence in what is expressed in this tape. What is expressed in this tape is based on the best expert opinions that you can obtain, and those opinions were obtained by numerous, literally over hundreds of contacts with non-Catholics to understand what motivates a non-Catholic, what constitutes his mental framework, and how the non-Catholic mind thinks and how it reasons, and also what are the values the non-Catholic holds important. We would point out to you at this time that every product produced by ARM has this quality, that all products produced by ARM are guaranteed to meet your satisfaction, or you may obtain a refund. We would also point at this time that additional help is available from ARM by obtaining these products. However, so you will not think that this is simply a selling device in order for you to buy and purchase ARM products, allow me simply to state that on the literature which accompanies this tape, you will find my telephone number. Please feel free to call me at any time with any specific questions or requests for advice and counseling which you have. I will answer those questions. I will give you the advice and counseling you need. There is no charge for this. I am simply pointing out that much of what you will ask has already been covered in ARM products, and I would suggest that you obtain an ARM catalog or the ARM products. This brings me up to a slight problem that this tape produces. Many times during this tape, I will make references to things you should be able to do or things you should learn how to do. At times, I will make reference to ARM products which will enable you to do this. In other words, if, as an example, the issue of purgatory comes up and you are not able to find in the New Testament words of Jesus which validate and verify the existence of purgatory, then you need to be taught how to do this. Of course, ARM produces such products. If, however, you are already skilled in such a matter, then feel free to simply ignore our recommendation. The problem is to make this tape completely comprehensive, answering every potential question or objection is not possible. The tape would consist of a series of tapes, which would probably take the better part of a week to listen to if you did it for 24 hours a day with no breaks whatsoever. So I must make a reasonable judgment on when to compromise, when to cut things short, when to expand, etc. And I hope that that judgment is correct, and I would be quite willing to listen to your comments and suggestions. Please call them in rather than write them in, and let me know how I can improve this product, what I did right, what I did wrong. Allow me at this point to suggest to you that although I am presenting this audio tape as an entire cohesive product, that is to say, as an entire cohesive, coherent program, you may, in fact, find some of it useful and some of it not useful. Of course, a great deal of the usefulness depends on how willing you are to commit yourself to do things. I simply point out to you at this time that even if you only find part of it useful, God bless you in your efforts, and I hope that you are successful in bringing about a better situation. I express a very simple form of morality. If you do a good thing for a good reason, You have done a good thing, period. Do not examine it further. Therefore, if you do not fulfill the intended entire end result of this program, but achieve some of the results, God bless you for taking the effort, and God bless your results. Let me at this time make a strong encouragement. I suggest that you listen to this tape once all the way through to get an overview of what we are trying to present, that you get a sense of direction, a sense of the program, and that you listen to it then a second time with your finger on the pause button of your tape player. The second time, I suggest you make notes, you make references, and start planning your course of attack. Start planning your own actions. For if you merely listen to this tape but do not put it into practice, then either you are a person who does not have the problem of mixed marriages in your family, and you need yourself to be married to a non-Catholic to have such problems. Almost all extended Catholic families have mixed marriages somewhere in them. And as I say, if you are not yourself a victim of a mixed marriage, and you listen to this tape, I assume that you are listening to it for general information or to learn additional information on handling the Catholic faith. That is certainly a laudatory goal. However, if you are in fact a person who has a problem with mixed marriages, do not put into effect, or at least attempt to put into effect, the program which is outlined in this tape, then you are essentially wasting your time. You have gone through with an empty gesture. Your intentions may be good, but your intentions must be followed up by a willingness to act. And if you have that willingness to act, then this program, this tape, and my organization are exactly and precisely what you need. You can no longer say that you don't know where to turn, you don't know where to go, and you don't know what to do. Now, after listening to this tape and being acquainted with ARM and what ARM does, you will know what to do. With this in mind, allow me to enter into the tape itself. In essence, this tape will consist of two parts. One is in attempting to show you what you should do to lessen the problems of a mixed marriage, and the second part will be telling you what to avoid in attempting to bring this about. In other words, to bring about any effective result, you must do what you are supposed to do and avoid what you must avoid. If I simply told you what to do, you would most likely make the most common errors which ARM research has shown Catholics make. These will derail your efforts, they will divert the thrust of your intentions, and you will probably wind up wasting a great deal of time. So, again, I suggest that you listen to the tape at least two times. First time to get a general sense of what we're talking about and where you're going. The second time, with something to write in your hands, a pen and a paper, stop the tape, make notes, plan your own attack. Let me give, if I may, a little historical background, if such a term is appropriate, on how this tape and this program came to exist. In my ministry, I serve many people and offer a great deal of help, and I received a letter from a client, a patron, and his letter read in part, "What do you recommend to a Catholic, me, married over 20 years to a very active and dedicated Methodist? The problem is, of course, the kids. I take them to CCD and Mass, but Mom is always providing very subtle negative reinforcement. I feel that I am losing the boys to the church." End of quote. First of all, let me explain to you that no one ever can be lost to the church. Every people leave of the church by an act of their own will. In this sense, you are not responsible and cannot be responsible for the acts of others. In the sense, however, that we influence others, especially our own children, we are responsible if we make no effort to remedy the situation. Secondly, and this is a very frequent problem with mixed marriages, the feeling that the children will be lost to the church. Second, although we tend to see the children as the main concern, the other partner is outside the church, clearly, unless the children have never been baptized or brought into the church. That means that the other partner, the spouse, is far more in danger of hell than the children. If the spouse converts, then the task becomes easier. The task of what? Of bringing about a cohesive, entire Catholic family, which will behave in a Catholic way, have Catholic values, and grow up and be nurtured and exist and function in a Catholic environment. If the spouse converts, the wound is healed, the separation is closed. This is why I am recommending in this tape that one takes the approach of not so much dealing directly with the children, but dealing indirectly with the children by dealing directly with the spouse. And I shall tend to say he, regardless of the gender, simply because I'm not politically correct and I'm not going to be bothered about saying he and she every time. Please make allowances if this offends you. I say that you should at least consider the attempt to convert your spouse as a possible course of action. Regardless of how committed a non-Catholic may seem, it may be an illusion. It may be an opinion on your part, and it may be that he has never actually been invited to examine real Catholicism. Before we go any further, let me point out, of course, that what we are dealing with here is not purely a human matter. We are dealing with a spiritual contest. You are going to be, at best, a willing instrument of God's will. Therefore, you should be confident and expect supernatural help at all times. No matter how dim the prospects may appear to be, with God, all things are possible. And I bring to your attention the situation and the example of St. Monica, who prayed for the conversion of her son, who became St. Augustine, for many, many, many years before he finally came back into the church. He did come back before her death, but apparently not much before her death. Remember, with God all things are possible, and remember you are not involved in a merely human contest. The first thing you should do before any contest, and when you are trying to so-called win the soul of your spouse, unquote, you are engaged in a contest, you should prepare and train to the best of your abilities. What this means is that you have to understand. The first best means, of course, is this tape. Let me suggest to you that you should also understand that your course of action has two aspects to it, a positive and a negative. Let's be frank. To advocate Catholicism is, ultimately, to ask someone to accept our faith as the one and only true religion and to reject and forsake all others. It is, in this sense, a negative thing and a positive thing. In essence, by affirming one thing, you ask the person to reject another. However, this does not mean to say that you need to emphasize one aspect to the exclusion of the other. you may ask one to affirm Catholicism and leave it implied that this will lead to a rejection of a previous system. By the same token, you may also simply attack the previous system that the person, the spouse, holds to, that is, the other system. And then, if you deal with what is wrong with that, you can conclude that he will naturally come into Catholicism as the only reasonable alternative. I am not able to say from this point of view whether it is better for you to take an entirely affirmative approach, Catholicism is right, an entirely negative approach, his, that is the spouse's system, is utterly wrong, or some combination of the two. This is one of the decisions you should make. I also point out at this time that even if you make a decision, you should be quite willing to abandon it if you find it is not leading to effectiveness, if it's you're finding yourself uncomfortable with it. But you should make a decision anyway simply to decide your course of action. There are essentially two ways to proceed on this. One is by using the absolute method, and one is by using the relative method. By the absolute method, I mean that Catholicism is examined and the other system is examined in the abstracts. That is to say, if the other system is examined at all. In other words, each system under discussion is examined by comparison against or with a standard of an absolute criterion, without reference to any other system. The relative method is to compare the two systems one against the other. In either case, it is absolutely essential to agree in advance to the criteria by which evaluations will be made. I shall get into pre-agreements somewhat later. For example, it will do very little good to point out that only Catholicism is internally consistent if internal consistency was not established in advance as a pre-agreement, as a sign of the one true faith. In fact, you may find out that the non-Catholic spouse does not believe in one true faith. If that is the case, then you're wasting your time trying to establish that Catholicism is the one true faith if he believes there are many one true faiths. I know that's a contradiction in terms, but nonetheless, that is a frequent problem. Another point I should make now, most of my effort, if not all, will be directed to the belief, the concept, the presumption, that the mixed marriage is taking place between a Catholic and a Protestant. This is the most likely scenario for American Catholics. And because of that, and because I'm trying to make this product most applicable, we shall assume that to be true. That does not mean to say that the arguments and the suggestions used can not be used in other cases. Of course they can. But with that in mind, let me go into the situation of first determining what kind of non-Catholic Protestant you are dealing with. In other words, let us identify the non-Catholic spouse. What I've said up until this point is that the first thing you should do is to prepare mentally, intellectually, educate yourself, etc. The second thing you should do is to decide, at least in the beginning, whether you are going to use an absolute standard or a relative standard. You also should decide how much you're going to use affirmative and how much you're going to use negative. In other words, how much are things right? How much are things wrong? How much is Catholicism right by those things which are necessarily true? And how much is Catholicism better than all of the other alternatives? Those are two choices which you should make before we get to the point of identification. Now, after we get to the point of identification, if you find that these choices are not correct, go back and change them. You should decide those, you should make those choices on your own degree of knowledge, your own personal inclination, and your own relationship with the other, with the non-Catholic spouse. Again, I would suggest, as you listen to this tape the second time, take out a piece of paper, check off boxes, write down a plan. This is not necessarily an easy thing you're going to do. You should understand that most likely the non-Catholic spouse is somewhat fixed, if not committed to his religious system, and you're asking for a significant change in a person's life. I would suggest that prudence dictates that you take a serious approach to it and plan on the program taking a period of time. We should hope, of course, that God would give everyone enough grace to convert immediately, and of course God does. But you are trying to remove the human impediments as best you can so that person will respond immediately to God's grace. With that in mind, let's go to the concept of the process of identification. We are dealing with the concept of identifying the non-Catholic type you are dealing with. There are, in general, three main types. These are general categories. Doesn't mean to say that your non-Catholic spouse will fit into exactly one of these categories, but in my experience, I have found that everyone fits pretty much into one or the other. They may also change at various different times of their lives from one to the other, but you should find out what they are at this time. This is relatively easy to find out. We'll get to that in a moment. The three main types are identifiable by asking the simple question, why are you not a Catholic? You should realize that the answer given may not be the actual reason. The real reason may come out only much later. I make a digression here. I dealt with an entire book dealing with a fallen away Catholic. If your non-Catholic spouse is a fallen away, that is someone who was raised a Catholic or at one point was at least a formal Catholic and now gives his allegiance to another religious system, you should realize that he probably will never tell you the truth the first time as to why he left the church. You should obtain the book, read it, and use the techniques in that. I return to the main part of the instruction at this point. The real reason may not come out until much later, but the first answer is a necessary starting point. You should realize that, again, he may change his type, he may expose himself to be something else, but nonetheless, he must start somewhere. So the question is, why are you not Catholic? The first general type is what I call the anything but a Catholic type. This means that he, the spouse, is probably not committed to any particular denomination, that is, non-Catholic denomination. He has probably belonged to several different denominations, congregations, and churches in his life. Such church hopping, as they call it, is very, very common among Protestants. The spouse has probably never even considered becoming a Catholic. He is a creature of habit, and his habit is to be anything but a Catholic. He is probably quite ignorant of what the true church teaches. The approach here may be one primarily of education and dispelling misconceptions. The point is that this person probably has never been invited into the church, and if he is invited in, there is a high probability that he will at least consider it. In which case, the situation may become one of education. Now, I should point out, of course, that most people will state that if they're in a mixed marriage, this issue probably came up. It may have, and the invitation that was expressed at that time, if one was expressed, may not have been correct. It may have not have been forceful enough. It may have not have been delivered in an effective way. I point out to you that very few men will get the date with the young lady the first time. They have to pursue it. And many times to get a job, you have to call the personnel office more than once. If you gave up the first time, you wouldn't have the job and wouldn't have the girlfriend or the wife you want. Bear in mind, this is human nature. So don't be discouraged simply because this spouse of yours was asked to come into the church 25 years ago by a priest and turned it down. Simply asking once is not necessarily enough. If the answers are extremely vague about why he is not a Catholic, if he can't really express what he has, then you're dealing with most likely an ignorant, anything but Catholic type. At that point, I would not suggest that you give him a book, unless, of course, it is one of the ARM products, because so many Catholic books out there today are filled with heresy, he might get a misconception. I would suggest instead that you bring him back to the Bible, ask him to read the words of Jesus and the teachings of St. Paul, and discuss things with him, trying to gradually lead him into the church, and of course, you can always ask him to call me. So the first type, again, is the anything but a Catholic. He is usually not committed to any particular denomination. He simply goes as a force of habit to any church which is not a Catholic church. Now, that doesn't mean to say he goes every Sunday. It simply means that's what he defines himself as, a generic Protestant. The second type of non-Catholic Protestant is he who is the except-for type. By this I mean he will say that something to the effect of this, he could become a Catholic, or he would become a Catholic, except for blank, fill in the blank. This may be the sacrament of confession, it may be contraception, it may be the veneration of the Blessed Mother, it may be the Inquisition, and maybe the Crusades. This type seems, on the surface, to be close to the faith, but beware, many times these objections are nothing but facades to cover up the deep moral problems which need the grace of confession to be resolved. If you keep this in mind, you're less likely to be distracted. It may still be necessary, in fact, to deal with the objection that he raises, to show him that the objection has no validity. Arm is expert here. If you cannot show that veneration of the Blessed Mother is valid and required of Christians, if you cannot show the Inquisitions were marvelous things and not things to be ashamed of, if you cannot show that the Crusades were fought for freedom of religion, you need to educate yourself. You need to learn how to arm yourself to defend the faith. Now, if this is the type you're dealing with, then don't be surprised if after you deal with one objection, he raises another and another and another. But you can deal with each one in turn, and what you are doing in this case is bringing him closer to the faith. Third type, which is extremely rare, is the really something else type. This means that the non-Catholic is actually committed to some other denomination. In the letter I read earlier in this tape, the patron who wrote me mentioned that his wife is a sincere and dedicated Methodist. Well, in fact, there can be no such thing as Methodism consists of no real faith whatsoever. If you're not aware of that, you need to study Methodism. But that's not the point. The point is, she is committed to something else which has a label on it. Whether you call it Methodism, or whether you call it Protestantism, or whether you call it an alternative form of Christianity, or whether you call it Reformed, it doesn't matter. There really is something else. He truly identifies himself as some other type of Christian, quote-unquote. He is some other type of Protestant. He is and intends to remain all of his life, an evangelical, a Lutheran, a Baptist, etc. In this case, I suggest the classic apologetic evangelism approach be used. This is outlined in some detail in the ARM tape, Defending the Faith, number one, and some of it also is outlined, I believe, in our ARM tape called Apologetics. So I'm giving you now your first technique. Again, I would suggest in the first listening, you simply get a vague sense of what this is, a general sense. Second time around, write it down in detail. This particular step is first achieve a pre-agreement. I haven't dealt with pre-agreements yet, but they're always necessary. I'll deal with them somewhat later. But the first step of this program is, one, achieve agreement or agree upon that the one true church is the one which teaches truth. This seems self-evident, doesn't it? It's not, and it is a very important pre-agreement. Next step, an error, usually in the form of a self-contradiction, is exposed in the Protestant belief system that this person adheres to. very simple to do. And again, ARM has numerous products which will help you with in our Protestant series. Third, a specific Catholic teaching is established by reference to the Bible or history or logic or right reason or philosophy or miracles or anything else as true. I mention this because you have pre-agreed on what criterion you're going to use to establish which Catholic position is correct. Now, before I told you that, and remember, we're still in step three here. Step one is agreement, the true church teaches the truth. Step two, this Protestant church teaches error. Conclusion, of course, is the Protestant church cannot be true. Step three, Catholic church teaches truth. Now, here's where you make comparisons or absolutes, as I said before. If you are going to make a comparison, deal with the same issue, such as the proper role of Scripture. If you're going to deal with different issues, deal with the example of the Protestant view of the universal priesthood versus the veneration of the Blessed Mother. Okay. You make the decision. Personally, I believe it is better to go on absolutes, deal with different issues, but you may find it different. Again, are you comparing two things, or are you dealing with two separate issues? Now, after the third step, where the Catholic position is shown to be true, go to the next step. Ask for the agreement on the conclusion that the non-Catholic system has been shown to be false because it contains a self-contradiction or a non-truth, and that the Catholic system does contain a truth. Thus, although this does not show the Catholic system to be true, it does show the Catholic system as a possible candidate for the true religion. You have now gotten into the point of evangelism. And allow me a brief comment on this. Apologetics and evangelism and instruction are three separate things. Apologetics is the successful defense of the faith, so that you show that the attack on the faith is incorrect. It is equivalent to achieving a not guilty verdict in a trial. You do not show who did the crime, you only show who didn't. Apologetics does not show that the faith is correct, it only shows that the attacks on the faith are wrong. These are quite distinct things. Evangelism is the presentation of Catholicism to a person with the goal of him submitting himself to Rome and accepting Catholicism as the means of salvation and as the religion established by Jesus through the apostles and handed on throughout time in the institutional hierarchical church, and that it provides the sacramental system by which salvation is achieved. That is evangelism. The third is instruction. Instruction is merely the conveyance of information from one person to another so that ignorance is dispelled. Quite different. I emphasize frequently in my apologetics books, in my apologetic techniques, and in many of the debates I've had, that the key thing here is deciding what issue you're in at a particular time. Notice we dealt with three general types of non-Catholics. In the first, the anything but Catholic type, most likely an invitation and instruction is what is necessary. In the second, the except for type, you are in apologetics. And in the third, the something else type, you're primarily in evangelism, although apologetics may be intermixed in that. I would also point out to you that before you attempt the apologetic effort that the second type most likely would bring about, that you should severely and significantly, and I cannot emphasize this enough, obtain the pre-apologetics book that ARM publishes, for this will teach you how to avoid the most common errors that people commit when they attempt apologetic efforts. In other words, if you read and understand the pre-apologetics book, you will probably cut your effective time down from 1 week to 1 day, or perhaps 1 hour. In other words, what I mean is, so many people waste so much time doing the wrong things when they attempt to defend the faith, that 90 to 95% of all of their effort is utterly wasteful. Again, if you have years to learn this from your own experience, feel free to do so. Otherwise, I simply suggest that you go to the experts. We are the experts. No one else in the field puts out the same products. Let me attempt to summarize what we have done so far. What I have encouraged you to do is prepare yourself before you start actually talking. Secondly, what I have said is that you make decisions on whether you wish to go on a very affirmative program or a very negative program, whether you wish to affirm things or deny errors. Some of this will be dictated to you based on the nature of the person you're dealing with. But even then, you may still feel that better to teach what is right rather than to expose what is wrong is the better way to get there. Again, next, you may wish to use a relative comparative system or a relative comparative approach, or shall I say a relative comparative emphasis, as opposed to an absolute, objective, impartial, so to speak, emphasis. I would suggest, again, you make these decisions simply that you keep in a certain direction. Third, what you do is identify the nature, the type, the category of the non-Catholic you're dealing with. And you do that by asking a very simple question. Why aren't you a Catholic? Or to put it slightly differently, what keeps you from coming into the church? You should expect one of three types of an answer. That is to say, you should expect the answer to put the person, the non-Catholic spouse, into one of three categories. The anything but a Catholic type, the except for this, I would become a Catholic, and the really not a Catholic type. And I've briefly given you a rough idea of what you should feel or how you should approach those. Let me at this point, as side one is running out, simply point out probably something you'll never think of. How do you start? I would suggest that you express your intentions clearly. You say that you hope that you can make the marriage better, that it would be better if you're of one religion, and that you have just listened to an audio tape which has convinced you that you have an obligation in Christian love to care enough about your spouse to try to do something about it. By the way, when I say spouse all the time, this doesn't mean to say that mother-in-laws, father-in-laws, etc., can't use this approach. Of course they can. But remember, your ultimate goal is an act of love. Your ultimate goal is to put the non-Catholic person on the road to heaven, which goes through Rome, keep the children on that Rome, on that road to Rome, and put yourself on that road also. And that's one of the reasons I call my organization All Roads Ministry, because all roads lead to Rome. But from there, only one road leads to heaven, and it does go through Rome. With this in mind, please turn over to side two, where the program will continue. Thank you. Side two, arm tape, mixed marriages, a program tending towards solution. We continue. I mentioned before the concept of pre-agreements. Allow me to tell you what I mean by a pre-agreement. A pre-agreement is a statement or a standard accepted by both parties in advance as being true. It shall serve as a criterion by which things will be judged to be correct, valid, fair, etc. To go back to the concept of a trial, simply for purposes of analogy, in courtrooms there are certain pre-agreements, and this is one reason why judges request that you be represented by counsel, because the counsel, the lawyer, understands the pre-agreements. He understands the rules of evidence. He understands the rules of behavior. He understands the rules of cross-examination, etc., etc., the etiquette of the court. Now, therefore, if the client or the defendant does not understand this, he may very well act inappropriately and jeopardize his own case. Not because he doesn't have truth or justice on his side, simply because he doesn't understand what's going on and he doesn't understand how to present his case. Pre-agreements can cover almost anything, including, as an example, that you will both speak equal amounts of time. Well, that's a simple pre-agreement, but it's amazing how often, if you don't have one like that, one side will dominate the conversation. Another pre-agreement, which would be quite simple, would be that you set a time aside during the week when this will be discussed. In other words, every Wednesday between 9 and 10 p.m. And if you can't make it, it'll be Thursday. Well, that may seem very simple, very basic. Most pre-agreements are. But without them, very frequently, the discussions will never take place. They'll ramble off in many different directions, go off on tangents, and never be directional. And directional conversation is exactly what you need when you're trying to deal with a non-Catholic. Failure to establish pre-agreements will almost always lead to unnecessary confusion and unnecessary disagreement later on, which will take a great deal of time and effort to resolve. It also will lead to an awful lot of misunderstanding, which will lead to acrimony. You should avoid this totally. There's going to be, probably almost always in every case in the discussion on a religion, some, shall we say, emotional problems. Let's keep them to a minimum and to the essential truths. Pre-agreements will do this. Another reason why I emphasize this is quite frequently Catholics will see basic matters quite differently than the way non-Catholics see them. There is a psychological term called projection. That means to attribute to another person the values, standards, procedures, mindsets, framework, reasoning abilities that you have. If you do this, and projecting is quite normal in human behavior, you'll make some disastrous mistakes. Understand, the non-Catholic, regardless of the degree of culpability, is in habitual sin because he is not a member of the Catholic Church. Sin tends to cloud the intellect. Therefore, you are not dealing with a person whose intellect is clear. In the same sense, if you are in a state of habitual sin, if you are a Catholic who do not go to Mass frequently, if you're not following the sacraments, if you're not following the laws of the Church, etc., if you're not dogmatically correct, you are also in a state of sin. Pre-agreements will help you clear things up, and are, I cannot emphasize how essential they are. Again, besides the pre-agreements I've already said, one is that you'll promise to be civil, not to get angry at one another. Seems basic, doesn't it? But if you actually ask the other person and commit yourself to it, there is a great strength in an agreement to a pre-agreement, which will help and almost impel a person behave correctly. Another pre-agreement, to define words when they come up in conversation. As an aside, I would point out again that I suggest you write these pre-agreements down when you listen to the tape the second time. Or I suggest you obtain the Prom Apologetics book or the Arm Fallen Away book, in which I list the pre-agreements at great length and explain why they're important and how to use them. Define words when they come up. Why? Because, surprisingly enough, most Protestants and Catholics have radically different meanings to very common words used in religion, such as church. Are you aware that most Protestants do not mean what you mean when you say the church? And when you invite someone into the Catholic Church, they may think they're already in it, even though they attend a Lutheran congregation? If you're not aware of that, and if you don't define it as what you mean by church, that is, that union of people who accept the authority of the successor of St. Peter as vicar of Christ and accept his authority on teachings and faith and morals, if you don't define the Catholic Church that way, you may find that your non-Catholic spouse has no idea what you're talking about. Again, Protestants have a totally different meaning by the totally different concept of the word salvation. They usually have no concept of all of the word grace. They think of a different book than you do when they say Bible. All of these things can lead to real problems. So again, define the word when it is used. Also, pre-agree that whoever uses the word is obligated to define it. Definitions will remain constant unless informed. Certainly, people, honest, good people, occasionally change their minds, they change their opinions, they change their values. Obviously, you're asking someone to do this by coming into the church. Therefore, if a definition changes or it's found to no longer be useful during a conversation or a discussion, then one is obligated to change it, but one has to inform both parties by open, clear statement that the definition is being changed. another free agreement to resolve all contradictions when they arise. In other words, contradiction will take prominence or preeminence in a certain sense over any other discussion. The contradiction will be brought to the fore and resolved before any further discussion goes on. Again, you should agree to be open and candid on everything. In other words, to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And if you hold something back, you say you're holding something back. Again, this seems self-evident. Do you think it's rather strange to ask your husband of 25 years to tell the truth on something? No, it's not. All I can say to you is that it's, trust me on this, it is very important to ask people to tell the truth. ARM produces a large number of tapes and debates, and on some of them I've asked the person halfway through the conversation to tell the truth, to be frank, to be candid. The conversation changes totally in its very essence. Because up until then, the person felt no obligation to be candid, truthful, and honest. Another pre-agreement, to answer all questions, even if the answer is simply, I don't know. Another, to not evade questions, to not dodge them, to not look for petty reasons to avoid things. These are only some pre-agreements. I think you should also list your own. Let me make a comment before I continue any further. Sometimes a pre-agreement is a post-agreement. What do I mean by that? I mean that sometimes you'll find when you're carrying on a conversation or a discussion or putting a program into effect, you're running into a problem. The problem repeats itself because there was no pre-agreement in advance made on something. You stop the conversation and say, I'd like to establish a pre-agreement here. Can we not agree X equaling Y or something to that effect? And then continue. So in other words, even if you forget to bring in a pre-agreement in the beginning, don't worry about it. Bring it in whenever you find the need arises. I bring up another pre-agreement, which will seem self-evident, but I cannot emphasize this enough. This is an essential pre-agreement, and very frequently you will find that this is the heart of most of the rejection of anti-Catholicism. What pre-agreement? You agree that a position, a statement, a fact, cannot be both true and false at the same time. In philosophical terms, this is called the law of identity. In reality, it's called reality. Seems so self-evident, doesn't it? But you would be surprised how many Protestants reject this or have never thought it through. If you can get a person to honestly agree to that statement, you are probably 55% of the way to bringing him into the Church of Rome, because all Catholicism is based on this position. How about another one, dealing with the value of truth? Ask for a pre-agreement on this, that truth is of value and that it must be internally consistent with itself, which is to say, again, things can either be true and false at the same time. Truth is of value. Everybody will say that. But if you follow through on that position alone, you can lead any honest person into the Church of Rome. How? If truth is of value in terms of your salvation, then those who have it are saved. Those who do not have it are not saved. Since this follows from the fact of truth being of value, and since it is itself true, then the true church must teach it. And what church teaches that you must have truth to be saved? The Catholic Church. Therefore, the Catholic Church is true. This is simply a quick, easy evangelism technique. Is this going to convert somebody? It may very well. But the point is, it is utterly irrefutable and a good place to start talking. Another pre-agreement, that Jesus' teachings are knowable by man and did not pass away with his death. Another pre-agreement, that the Bible contains and will support the truth of Jesus' teachings, and therefore, the truth and teachings of his church, that is, his denomination. Another pre-agreement, that the true faith taught by the true church will contain the true teachings of the Bible. Again, most of these things seem self-evident, don't they? pre-agreements usually are. But unless you say them out, and unless you use them as pins driven by a mountain, similar to what a mountaineer uses to drive into the face of rock by which he may suspend his rope, save his life, and climb yet further, unless you use them in this way, you will find that, like a mountaineer without a rock, you're more likely to fall off, hit the bottom with great damage and pain, having to start off all over again on what you're trying to do. Okay, now, understand what I'm saying here about three agreements. So now what we have so far, again, in order to summarize, is you make a decision on which way you want to go, positive or negative, affirmative or denying. You make a decision on whether you want to use more absolutes or comparatives. Again, these decisions are purely tentative and to be abandoned at any time. You then declare your intentions to your spouse and determine what kind of a non-Catholic he is. Then, announcing your intentions to try to close the gap in the marriage. You may, if you wish, also announce it this way, that you wish to, shall we say, make him more aware of what Catholicism is, so there'll be less of a bridge between you, or more aware of Catholicism so he'll less object to children being raised as Catholics, anything like that, which is certainly true. And if he asks you if you're trying to convert him, of course you have to say you are. Even if he says he's not willing to be converted, ask him if he's simply willing to listen, because in your system it's a good thing to do anyway. We're up to that point. Now what you do is set up pre-agreements. Pre-agreements I mentioned, I would say you should use all of them. You should again obtain the books I spoke about before. You should obtain the tape on logic that Arm puts out so you understand how to make an argument, and you should also obtain the tape on how to argue, which will also explain how to present things so that you can make cases. Now, I mentioned before about the concept of avoiding errors. I should like to deal with them now. I shall now give you a list of things which you should avoid. You should avoid these definitely. You should write these down, memorize them, and whenever you find yourself believing them, or inclining this way, or saying these things, avoid it. This will save you endless amount of time. Probably the most common mistake which Catholics make about non-Catholics is to assume that non-Catholics have the same commitment to their faiths, denominations, churches, and religions that we do. The overwhelming majority of Protestants will be members of more than one denomination in their lives, and at each time they will appear to be very loyal to the system, at least to the outsider. Almost always, this is purely a social matter and not a religious matter. By this I mean that the spouse likes the people in the congregation, and the minister, and the music, and the location, and the parking, and the architecture. The theology, if any, of these denominations and congregations is almost always no factor whatsoever in why the spouse likes the denomination. The Catholic should realize that by asking the non-Catholic spouse to change, you are asking him to desert his friends and leave home at the same time. If the non-Catholic sees all religions as pretty much the same, then there is no reason why he should undergo such emotional distress and pay such a high social price if there is no clearly evident gain. In other words, why should he leave where he's comfortable? Say goodbye to all of his friends, to go into your church, if there's nothing really to gain. Therefore, the Catholic needs to early and always be careful of giving any sense of false ecumenism. Too often Catholics feel that by emphasizing similarities, they are making the transitions easier. In fact, they are making it far less likely. The non-Catholic spouse will ask himself, why should he change congregations? Why is that necessary when no essential differences are involved? It's a good question. I guess the only thing you can really say at this point is you can still play golf with your non-Catholic buddies, and you can still be friends. We can still have the minister over our house for dinner, but you simply can't go to that church anymore as a congregant, as a member who's worshiping, because truth really does matter. worshiping God the right way is going to stand you in good stead at your last judgment, while worshiping God the wrong way is going to put you in hell. You don't have to put it that bluntly, but you must believe that, otherwise you're not a Catholic yourself. Another mistake most Catholics make, a very, very common error, is to confuse Catholics, people, with Catholicism, a religion. Catholics, people, make mistakes, which sometimes are not defensible at all. There are Catholics out there who have performed abortions, sold contraceptives, pushed drugs, and acted as hitmen for the mafia. You, however, are advancing a system, not defending individuals. The system is the same regardless of the type of people involved. In other words, you are to understand that regardless of whether a person functions correctly as a Catholic or not, regardless of how he functions with the faith that God gives him, these things are irrelevant to the fact that the divinely instituted church cannot err, is beyond reform, and perfectly does the functions it's supposed to. That is, pass on the teachings of Jesus given to the apostles, and provide the means of grace by which the elect may be saved. Keep the issue abstract on truth, on teachings, and not on other people. Now, there is an exception to this. The exception to this is, number one, if you are a skilled Catholic evangelist, you may very well make a very good case for Catholicism by bringing in the lives of the saints, and by exceptional Catholic people, and by the Reformation that took place in people when they became Catholics. If you feel skilled in doing this, fine. If you don't feel skilled in doing it, stay away. And say this, what I told you. I'm not defending Catholics. I'm not talking about Catholics. I'm talking about Catholicism and you. The other exception is, if you want to involve me, if you wish to turn your spouse over to me, call me, put him on the phone with me, tell him that this Catholic, the one who's recording this tape, can answer all his questions, can refute all his errors, can debate his minister and win, can show him in the Bible where purgatory, the Marian doctrines, tradition, intercessory prayer, and all the other Catholic doctrines are located. I can. So can you, if you rely on God. But if you're not going to rely on God, you can rely on me. Another problem, another mistake that Catholics make, is to assume that Protestants know more about the Bible than Catholics do. So therefore, most Catholics automatically assume that when it comes to the Bible, they're at a disadvantage, that the Protestant is at an advantage. If, as an example, you are speaking to your non-Catholic spouse and he says, gee whiz, would you like to talk to my minister about this? And the minister comes over bringing a Bible, most Catholics would panic. They would say, I don't know the Bible well enough. I haven't read it. I haven't studied it. This is a mistake in two ways. Number one, you should know the Bible and you should study it, of course. But number two, you probably know, if you are a regular Catholic, that is to say, one who goes to Mass on Sundays, occasionally other times, and listens when they read from the Bible during the readings, I personally guarantee you that you know more of the Bible, its teachings, its meanings, more of the words of Jesus, than even the vast majority of so-called Protestant scholars. Understand that non-Catholics approach the Bible in the way we approach a telephone book. You don't sit down and read it from beginning to end. You look up something quite specific there to meet a specific need at a specific time, then you put the book away. Regardless of the fact that many Protestants will say that they read the Bible once a year and study it frequently, in fact, they know almost nothing about it at all. They read approximately 20, 25, maybe 30 verses over and over and over again. They do not read what went before and what went after. On this, once again, I ask you to trust me, or I ask you to simply try to point out to Protestants, or demonstrate this to Protestants, as I do, by simply giving the many quotes that you know from Jesus, and ask Protestants where in the Bible that is contained or who said it. And you'll find many of them, including ministers, are not able to answer you, and they will even say that such things are not in the Bible. be aware of that. So do not feel unarmed when it comes to the matter of the Bible. Again, if you obtain products from ARM, which teach you how to use the Bible, give you Bible reference sheets, etc., etc., you'll be much better armed. But you can find out all these things yourself. It'll simply take you longer, or you can use us and save an awful lot of time. But then that's what we're here for, is to save you time. So again, this mistake is a disastrous mistake to assume that they know more than you do. In a sense, the next error I'm going to bring up is one which is basic to this entire thing. Understand that you're not dealing with a merely human contest between human intellects and who can make a better argument for his case. This is not really something like a trial in court with a better lawyer or the one with the more references to precedents on previous cases wins. This is a spiritual conflict. Understand what you have on your side. You have God. You have the Blessed Mother. You have the saints in heaven. And you have not only your guardian angel, but his also. Guardian angels are very, very powerful spirits assigned to individuals with the goal of inducing those people to get to heaven, that is, to be saved. And that is to mean to accept the Church of Rome, the Catholic Church. Therefore, I suggest very strongly that you invoke the spiritual aspects of this. Expect miracles. Expect your guardian angels to work together. Expect help from the Blessed Mother. Start lighting candles. Start going to Mass for this particular purpose. Start saying the rosary if you don't already. And if you do, consider saying an extra rosary for this particular intention. Find out which saints are those that are assigned the patronage of such efforts. Get involved with them. This brings me to another point, an error that Catholics make, is to present Catholicism primarily as an intellectual or spiritual or a religious matter without the ritual. Ritual, unfortunately, in this part of the 20th century in America, has a negative connotation to it. In fact, it should not. By rituals, I mean not only the Mass, I mean statues, candles in front of pitchers, rosaries, scapulars, holy water, and all of the medals. All of those things which distinguish Catholics from non-Catholics. I would suggest that you, if you have not done it already, that you start saying grace before meals publicly. Openly. If your spouse objects, say it silently, but make the sign of the cross. Make sure that your children wear medals. Make sure there are religious artifacts in the house, in the car. If your husband objects radically, hide them. There are particular scapulars, which I have been told, I believe the green ones, which are supposed to work on things like this. I'm not particularly knowledgeable. I suggest you try to find out from people who are more expert in the field. Start using the sacramentals. Sacramentals, if they are functioning correctly, if they are used with the proper intention, tend to chase away evil spirits. Remember, to be out of the church is sin. And sin has three sources, as St. Paul tells us: the world, the flesh, and the devil. I have alluded to the concept of the world. The social aspects of Protestantism are frequently more comforting, more open, more soothing, and certainly with no hard edges in comparison to Catholicism. That is one reason why people will choose non-Catholic religions as opposed to Catholicism. They follow the world. They wish to be accepted, not rejected by the world. Bear this in mind. The flesh is simple. These are our own sinful tendencies from our fallen, but not depraved, that is to say, our impaired nature as the result of Adam's sin. Our tendency towards sin, our concupiscence, makes us want to accept our own fleshly pleasures, which may be, of course, even spiritual, and to reject that system which tells us to repent and reform and work out our salvation in fear and trembling. The third aspect, of course, is Satan and his assistants, evil, fallen angels. You can combat them with spiritual warfare, not only prayer, but holy water and sacramentals. If your spouse is being kept out by Satan, these are far more likely to be effective than simple arguments. Even if he is not particularly active in your household, even if it is the other way, it is important that if you do bring your spouse into the church, that you bring him into a fully Catholic concept. This is what you want the children to adhere to, grow up in, and remain faithful to. You do this by emphasizing the Catholic aspects: crucifixes, rosaries, scapulars, medals, books, statues, candles. Once again, if you do not light candles for this devotion, start lighting candles for this devotion. Take your children, start using Catholic expressions, and make sure, of course, you never say the Protestant Our Father version. What I'm saying is, the mistake here is that the common mistake is failing to present Catholicism as an entire practice, as an entire way of life, as a thing which possesses the entire man. This is a very interesting way to approach the social aspects that the person has seen otherwise, and it is a subtle way to present Catholicism to a person. Again, if this leads to discord within the family, all that I can say is the following. Jesus said that he came to split families and to cause problems. And while I'm on this subject, let me bring this up. You should face the fact now, and perhaps I should have brought this up earlier, that this a program, if you put it into effect, these intentions may lead to calamity. Think about it now. Face it now. Be willing to deal with it now. Bring it up, you may get into a violent argument. You may get into a denunciation. You may get into a command, especially if the husband is trying to exercise headship over you and you're the wife, that you never bring the subject matter up again. It may even lead to divorce. Face all these facts now. The likelihood is extremely low. In other words, the probability is extremely slight that these extreme matters will happen. But understand this and face it sincerely before you proceed. Are you here to save your soul or simply to be the spouse of a person? Do you love this person more than you love God? If so, be prepared to spend eternity in hell with that person, because Jesus makes it clear that if you love anyone more than you love him, you are not worthy of him. This does not mean to say that the honest-to-goodness, real emotional love that you feel for your husband and your wife should be denied. It does not mean to say that this is not a real thing and not your primary motivating factor. It is. It should be. I'm simply saying that your active will, somewhere before you start this program, should be this, as we say in the Our Father: Thy will be done. Then add to it, not mine, if mine be wrong or not in accord with yours. As St. Paul tells us in his epistle, God has a plan by which all men may be saved and come to a knowledge of truth. If you do not believe this, then you are denying St. Paul, you are denying his inspiration, you are denying God. You cannot be saved. The program, the plan by which your husband or your wife may be saved, may very well involve you understanding that you must put God first, at least as an act of will. Emotionally, it may be much easier to deal with your husband or your wife because they're real people. They have needs. You love them. You share things with them. You comfort them. You provide for them. You cherish them. This is easy to understand. God sometimes is abstract to us. But still, virtue begins with the act of will. And faith begins, after it is a gift, with the act of will. Virtue builds on habit. Make the act of will. Lord, I am willing to run the risk. I am willing to pay the price in order to show my love, not only for you, but for my spouse. I am concerned for his soul. And if he rejects me on account of me doing what is good for him because it is your teaching, then God, remember that when I stand in front of you and you judge me, for I gave up much Remember, you must be willing to lose everything, to give up your very self in order to follow Jesus. And I would say that is probably the most basic error you could make, to fail to go into this properly prepared, spiritually, willfully accepting what God will give, what God will lead you, and what God programs you to do. Now, that leads me to my next mistake that people make. They become so geared, so prepared, so much, with so much emphasis on study, with so much emphasis on thinking and reasoning, that they do not understand that God is using them as a willing instrument of His will when they relax their own. So what am I telling you? I am saying prepare, yes. Make decisions, yes. These are simple exercises of the virtue of prudence. Be as forearmed as you can. Be as well-armed as you can. But then, say what is in your heart. Say what God puts in your mouth. Be impulsive. Be blunt. Be forthright. Don't hold back. Remember what I told you before. Your guardian angels are there. Your blessed mother is not going to desert you. And Jesus, who died on the cross for you and accepted that scourging and that agony in the garden for you, He will not leave you an orphan. He will put the right words in your mouth. Expect help, and you will get help. Expect that what you say will be the right thing, and it will be the right thing. In other words, have faith. Live in faith. Exercise your faith by having the faith to believe that God will use you correctly. And He will. On this, I can only say again that if you wish to obtain any one of the many debate tapes, you'll see where I've taken on anti-Catholic experts without preparation and have defeated them all, simply because I expected that God would put the right words in my mouth at the time, and He did. And if you want more proof of that, call me sometime with your worst problem, and it will be solved on the phone. By problem, I don't mean that I'm a spiritual guide. I'm not a spiritual counselor. I'm not a spiritual director. But I can answer your questions on how to answer this, how to answer that, how to handle this, how to handle that, in confrontations with non-Catholics. That I am an expert on, simply because it is not I who speak to you, but God who uses me, and God can use you too. Have the trusting confidence, which is an exercise of faith, that God will use you. And of course, I would say the last mistake that people make on this is not being doctrinally correct. If you haven't gone to confession in a long time and need to do so, and you probably need to do so, do so. If you're not receiving the body of Christ whenever you may at Mass, do so. If you're not praying the rosary, do so. If you do not have devotions to saints, develop them. If you're not living a Catholic life, start it. Not hard. If you don't say grace publicly when you sit down at McDonald's or Burger King at lunch, do so. Be a public Catholic. After all, you're asking your spouse to become one. Set the example. To ask someone to do something is one thing. To ask something to do something after you do it is far more effective. I don't have to tell you that. You all know that. The basic law of human nature. Okay, let's see if we can go through a summary again. What I'm suggesting is that first you sit down and think, reason what you'd like to do. Do you want to do comparisons? Do you want to do absolutes? Are you going to emphasize the positive aspects of our system or the negative aspects of the other system? Okay. Then what you're going to do is you're going to determine what kind of a non-Catholic you're dealing with. Then you're going to make your intentions clear. You're going to set up pre-agreements, and you're going to use specific techniques, which ARM can teach you. I couldn't possibly eliminate them all, enumerate them all now, or you're simply going to rely on free-form conversation. You're going to keep a list of pre-agreements that you will write down in advance, which you will state, and you're going to keep a list, which you will write down and memorize, of mistakes, which you will avoid. Let me point out one last thing. Apologetics is the proper defense of the faith. And apologetics is much more reasonable, or shall I say, much more easy, because it's quite specific, than evangelism. You may wish to use an apologetic approach to try to bring your non-Catholic in. By this I mean you may wish to induce him to bring up his objections to Catholicism and defeat them all in turn. It's easier in many ways because it's a focus on things, and because most attacks on the Catholic Church are so self-contradictory that if you know how to analyze them, they fall apart on their own. If this is your desire, if you think this is the best way to go, you can do no better than to obtain the Armed Free Apologetics book, which teaches you how to induce attacks on the Church for purposes of refuting them, and then obtain the Apologetics book, which will teach you how to turn apologetic efforts, that is, defensive efforts, into evangelism efforts. I would also point out to you that ARM has courses on audio and videotape of both evangelism training programs and apologetic training programs. This is an aside. I'm simply pointing out again, make it clear at any particular time whether you're dealing with apologetics, evangelism, or an instruction, and that will be primarily dictated by the nature of the non-Catholic you're dealing with. And of course, be aware that what the non-Catholic says he is may not be in fact true. Of course, and I hope this is self-evident, you'll probably need the patience of Job, the zeal of Elijah, and the wisdom of Solomon. But remember, all of those things came to those men from God. And the same God who gave those men those attributes and those gifts loves you so much that he will give you whatever you need. Be confident, be trusting, and expect a miracle. And it will happen. Briefly, what I think you should obtain as a starting point from ARM if you are not comfortable in these areas are tapes on Roman Catholic Proofs 1 and 2, which give approximately 20 proofs of the Roman Catholic Church on why it alone is the true Church of Christ. If your non-Catholic is a former Catholic, a fallen away, one time was a formal Catholic, now belongs to some other denomination, you should obtain our tape Winning Back Souls and our Fallen Away book. If you do not know how to defend the faith, you should learn how to defend the faith by obtaining our Defending the Faith 1 or Defending the Faith 2 tapes. Also our tape on apologetics. If you cannot present an argument logically, I would suggest you obtain our tape on logic and our tape on how to argue. If you're weak on evangelism and weak on apologetics in the senses of the overall view of it, you should obtain our apologetics training program and our various different specific apologetic programs, such as our ACT program, our LAIR program, our German dictionary program. All of these are just names for techniques which are quite useful in defending the faith. If you are weak on specific doctrines, cannot find them in the Bible and think that they're useful, we suggest you obtain our catalog and learn where you can find apostolic succession, intercessory prayer, purgatory, the doctrines of the Blessed Mother, and tradition, and many, many other formal Catholic doctrines which are clearly contained in the Bible, primarily the New Testament, once you know how to find them. If you're taking a negative approach and wish to find out why Protestantism fails on its view of the Church, on infallibility, on its view of truth, on its view of sin, on its view of total depravity, etc., obtain our tapes dealing with Protestantism. I tell you with all frankness, you will find no better products anywhere, and if you need any confirmation of that, as I said before, simply give me a call. So again, I hope this tape has been of use to you. I hope it has started you in the right direction. I cannot make it too specific. I don't know your situation. I've compromised, and I hope I've made a proper judgment between making it too specific and too general. And again, if this is your first time listening to it, listen to it again. First, get that pen and paper out. Start writing notes. Your journey to begin starts now. Many people say that a journey of 10,000 miles begins with a single step. They're wrong. It begins with the decision to make the first step. Your journey begins with the act of will. Care enough about your own soul and about the soul of your spouse or the loved one in your family to try to bring him into the church, outside of which he cannot be saved. Thank you for listening. God bless. I'd love to hear your comments. Please feel free to call me. You may obtain additional copies of this tape or any products that we put out by contacting us at ARM55PALEN. That's P Paul A L E N Road, number 38, Hope Well Junction, New York 12533. Or, of course, call the telephone number which was on the literature. Once again, thank you for listening, and God bless.